Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. Today, I'm so excited to be talking with Dr. Penny Kendall Reed. She has been a mentor. I've seen her speak. She teaches and educates other naturopathic doctors, and she's really a leader and a trailblazer in the genetic world. Dr. Penny Kendall Reed is the director and practicing naturopathic doctor at the Urban Wellness Clinic in Toronto. After graduating from McGill University, in neurobiology, she earned a degree in naturopathic medicine from the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine here in Toronto and received the Dr. Alan Tyler Award for Most Outstanding Clinician. Dr. Kendall Reed is the author of 5 national best-selling books and just released her 6th book called Fix Your Genes to Fit Your Genes. I love the title. In 2013, she was voted Naturopath of the Year and in 2018 was the recipient of the Top Naturopathic Doctor Award in Canada. She lectures worldwide on genetics, how to interpret and treat SNPs, we'll talk about those, neuroendocrine disorders and metabolic-related diseases. She is the creator of GeneRx, an integrated genetic platform, and an international medical consultant for Douglas Laboratories, Pure Encapsulations, and Pure Genomics. So welcome, Dr. Penny. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And yeah, I love that title. Very witty. So I think this time of the year, you know, we want to fit
into. I mean, the number of patients that come into my office, and that's their goal when we talk about when we talk about weight as practitioners, we're always thinking about, you know, from a health point of view. But to be honest with you, the patient sitting across from us, they just want to fit into their genes again.
That's right. And this time of the year too, right? After all the indulging over the holidays.
It's
a goal for a lot of people. So before we jump into the meat of the interview, I wanted to just ask you one icebreaker question. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know, what's one thing you can't live without right now? Like, what's helping you get through this time or helping to keep you healthy?
Exercise. By far, exercise is the one thing I can't live without. And I've always been that way. I genetically code very low for dopamine. And exercise releases a great deal of dopamine. And so now I see why I need it. But literally, I start my day with that. I get up very early in the morning and it is the first thing that I do. And on my one day off a week that I give my body a rest, honestly, my mood is not quite the same, particularly during COVID. So I would have to say exercise is absolutely the one thing I can't do without.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Yeah, it's definitely a great way to relieve stress. And you said, so it boosts dopamine. For people that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about dopamine?
You bet. Dopamine is our motivating chemical messenger. It is our addictive chemical messenger and our focus concentration messenger. And exercise releases a great deal of dopamine, as it does serotonin, our happy hormone. But there's a bit of a catch-22 with dopamine and exercise. When you are, the more you exercise, the more dopamine you release, and then the more motivated you are to keep exercising the next day. When you stop exercising, the dopamine starts to drop a little bit, so then we're less likely to exercise the next day. And that's why they always say, you know, once you sort of get past that hump of initiating an exercise program, then you start to get to that point where you're, quote, addicted to it. Well, you actually literally are through that dopamine messenger.
Love it.
I have to say a close second, though, to exercise for me right now is chocolate-covered almonds. That's so good.
That sounds great, too. I know I'm all about the dark chocolate.
Exactly.
And you can get a dopamine hit from that, I'm sure, too.
You bet. Absolutely.
Definitely. And then, are there certain types of exercises where we get a higher release of dopamine?
Well, actually, that's where genetics comes in again. Our genes will actually dictate what type of exercise is best for our body with respect to what type of exercise will actually make us gain weight or lose weight, what type of exercise will increase inflammation or decrease inflammation. So through all of those different routes, that will actually dictate the best form of exercise for the body and thus the most amount of dopamine or serotonin. So for me, I'm all endurance. I am the slower, longer, runner, and I had naturally sort of gravitated towards that at a young age, which was great. Whenever I tried to do high intensity interval training, my body would actually get very inflamed. And especially more so as I age. When we're younger, we can sort of get away with anything, but as we age, our genes really start to express themselves more so, and that certainly can come out. So our genes pretty much dictate almost everything in our body. So when we think about our genes ourselves, we think about taking one gene from mom and one from dad, and that dictates our genes. And certainly that holds true. It's not quite a full gene that we take from each parent. Let's think about it as half a gene, if you will, and that kind of half a gene is called an allele. But we take characteristics for each gene from each of our parents. And the purpose of a gene is to give a recipe, if you will, to make a protein. And then that protein does a job, whether it is making a hormone, making an antibody, giving, expressing eye color, all sorts of different variables, how we respond to stress, etc. And that protein, we have the ability to increase or decrease the expression of that protein or how much of that protein we make by different lifestyle variables, whether it's our diet, whether it's exercise, whether it's natural supplementation, whether it's pharmaceuticals, whether it's a meditation. There's all sorts of different ways that we can increase or decrease how much that gene works. And that's sort of my job, because what I do is I take a look at myself and lots of doctors out there. I take a look at how somebody codes for a gene. And if it's a great coding, if it's a coding that says, you know, we're going to make a lot of this fat burning hormone, then I'm going to do everything I can to help keep that gene in that position and making that protein to keep the metabolism high. But if that gene codes in a different way and it codes for blocking the production of the hormones that increase the rate of the metabolism, then I'm going to try to turn off the expression of that gene so that we can then maximize that metabolic rate for the person. Same thing holds true if it was the production of an inflammatory marker or stimulating an immune response. So it's really about looking how our individual coding applies and then pushing a gene. A really good example of that is there's a lot of women out there who are, and men, who are positive for the BRCA gene, the breast cancer gene, but they don't actually get breast cancer in their lifetime. And then there's a lot of women or men who are negative for the BRCA gene, but they actually get breast cancer. So you kind of think, well, what's going on here? And there are genes that dictate how we push our estrogen in our body. Do we push it to the 2-hydroxy form, which is the anti-cancer form, the kind that doesn't stimulate the BRCA genes? Or do we push it to the 4-hydroxy form, which is the more cancerous form, which does stimulate those genes? So what I do is I look at how they code for those 2-hydroxy and 4-hydroxy estrogen genes, and we want to turn off the expression of the 4-hydroxy gene, turn on the expression of the 2-hydroxy gene, and that really decreases the chances of turning on the BRCA gene. So it's all this sort of interplay between our genes that really helps to create our health, and we have the ability to manipulate that. There's a great deal of science behind it. I've been doing this for a very long time, and science is growing each and every year. And I look at genetics as this big puzzle, and we're getting more and more pieces of this puzzle, as time progresses. And it really is, it's like when we went from the X-ray to the MRI, when we suddenly got the MRI machine, we had this big, deeper look inside the body. Genetics is exactly like that. Rather than just looking at what somebody, their levels are in their blood, which is just a pinpoint moment in time, we can peek inside the body now and look at how much hormone one makes, how quickly they break it down, how quickly they bind that hormone into the receptor, how many receptors for that hormone they have. So we see the whole metabolism of a hormone, not just a one pinpoint moment in time level in their blood or in their saliva at that moment.
I wanted to touch a little bit on SNPs because I know people hear that. What are those and what do they do?
Absolutely. So a SNP is called a single nucleotide polymorphism. So it's basically when a gene sort of alters itself. So when I spoke about those alleles with a gene or the two halves of a gene, originally, way back when we were first developed, way back in time, our genes, two sides of the genes generally both coded the same way. And that's called the ancestral gene or the ancestral allele. But over time, that allele or half of that gene morphed into a different half. So, and how it happens is when we replicate a cell in our body, our DNA makes an exact replica of itself and divides itself in two, and then we have an exact cell or an exact replica of that cell. But when that DNA is copying itself and making a replica of itself, sometimes it makes a little typo error, just as if we were typing, we make a spelling error. So it makes a different series of what are called, that there's four different base nucleotides in our DNA or four different letters. And sometimes it swaps out one letter for a different letter just by accident. But that now creates a different recipe for a different protein. And so now that new protein carries with it a different set of traits for that same gene. And that's what a SNP is. It's when there's been a slight alteration in our ancestral gene or ancestral allele to create a new recipe for a new protein that carries with it different traits. Generally, most often, about 90% of the time, it goes to an adverse set of traits. So we call it the variant allele or the altered allele generally carries with it the not so good traits. Mm-hmm. So an example of that could be if it was a gene that was coding for the production of, let's say, adiponectin, which is the adipoQ gene. Adiponectin is a hormone in our body which controls insulin release, blood sugar levels, fatty acid oxidation, inflammation. So it's a big metabolic gene in terms of the rate of our metabolism. And the ancestral allele would be, you make a lot of adiponectin, which is fantastic. The variant allele would be, you don't make so much adiponectin. In fact, you make very, very little. Sometimes people code with two of the normal alleles or ancestral alleles, so they make a great deal of adiponectin. Sometimes they have one of each from each parent. So they have one ancestral or normal and one variant allele, the mutated allele. So they make less than the normal amount of adiponectin. And if two of their alleles, so they took one variant allele from each parent, so they're what's called homozygote variant, they make very, very little adiponectin.
So these can be thwarting their efforts with weight loss, with insulin balance and blood sugar balance. So it's so fascinating. Is this, so these SNP changes, so are they random or is there anything that may push you more likely in a direction to make a mistake when you're copying your DNA?
So a couple of different things. The biggest thing that has an impact on this is cortisol, our stress hormone. It has actually been shown to cross the nuclear membrane and actually bind to DNA, therefore altering our messenger RNA. So that is probably the biggest thing. And there was actually a couple of years ago, there was a set of twins in the United States. One was an astronaut and one wasn't. They were identical twins, so they had identical genes. And one went up to space for a few months and he came back from space 7% different DNA than when he went back up. So he's 7% different DNA from his twin because of the physical slash and emotional stress of being up in space.
It's wow. That is remarkable. So this is happening throughout our life then as well, correct? So major changes, whether that someone has a baby or they go through a major stressor or illness, they're going to start to see, are there going to be new expressions?
You are absolutely right. They have shown, actually, when they have followed along survivors, Holocaust survivors, and then two generations later of Holocaust survivors, the DNA of the Holocaust survivors actually changed. It increased the expression of a lot of their stress genes and trauma genes, and then that was actually passed down through generation after generation. Really good example is an in-lab study that was done on mice. And what they did is they exposed a bunch of mice to the smell of acetone in their cage. And every time the smell of acetone came in, they also gave them a foot shock. And when mice are in a cage and they get a foot shock, their bodies literally physically shudder. So they'll try to do anything they can to avoid the foot shock. And so what they found after a few months of exposure to the foot shock and the acetone, when they analyzed their DNA, they had increased the number of receptors, smell receptors that can actually smell acetone. So they had increased the expression of that gene and actually altered their alleles with it or their genetic coding for it so that the mice could detect acetone at a much lower level in hopes of avoiding the foot shock, thinking like, if I can smell this earlier on, I can run away. Wow. Then what they did is they analyzed the genes again of mice two generations later who had never been exposed to acetone, and they put the smell of acetone suddenly in their cage, and immediately those mice who had never been exposed to acetone started to have a foot shock. Started to shudder as if they had had a foot shock, just like their ancestors did. And their DNA also retained that increased number of, they're called M17 receptors, those smell receptors.
Wow.
So we really can alter it. And stress is one of the biggest things that does that.
Oh my gosh. And we're living in a pandemic right now. So everybody's genes and DNA is changing as we speak. This is blowing my mind. And now I'm feeling a little guilty for all the partying I did in my teenage years for what's going to be transmitted down to my son. And if he has any kids, I wasn't a huge partier, but bigger than I am now.
Exactly.
Anyway, I'll let that guilt go. Yeah,
exactly.
So this then brings up the question. So if we can talk about genetic testing, so is it something you want to just get once, or do you need to get it multiple times? And then kind of how do you get it? What is that process like?
Yeah, really good question. I get that asked by patients all the time. Our genes, our actual gene itself, will never change. So you only ever need to test your genes once. The difference is that gene turned on or off? So I sort of explain it as a gene is like a light switch. I have the same light switch in my room. The difference is, have I turned it on or have I turned it off? And so it doesn't matter how many times I walk into the room. I could paint the room a different color. I could do whatever I wanted to, but that light switch is still going to be the same. Again, it's just whether it's on or off. And our genes are very similar to that. So you only ever have to test them once. What I do is I work with the genetic raw data from 23andMe, and that way our patients can order it, and so many patients have already ordered it. You do need the health and ancestry, not just the ancestry data file, because the ancestry testing is literally more just about ancestry or eye color or things like that. It doesn't have all the health genes that I'm interested in. The reason I use that one is it's one of the most economical platforms that gives the widest variety of genes, and patients have access to ordering it themselves. All the sort of specialized labs that doctors just have access to, they're a lot more expensive. You generally have to order a few panels to get a wide variety of genes, because a lot of them have just a cardiac panel or just a metabolic panel or just a detoxification panel, and I want them all. And I don't want people to have to buy several different panels. I want just one genetic data panel.
Mm-hmm, great. And it's a saliva test, correct?
It is. Yeah. So it's very easy. They just go online, 23andme.ca, and order their kit for the health and ancestry kit. And it frequently goes on sale. It will be on sale most likely Valentine's and Mother's Day and Father's Day. It was a big sale at New Year's, sort of any holiday. It frequently goes on for 50% off. And then 23andMe will send out, you generally within 24 to 48 business hours, you will get a kit to your home, and it gives full-on instructions. It's very easy. You just spit into this little tube, close the tube over. They give you a pre-packaged, pre-posted envelope that you drop it into, and then you just drop that into the post office or into a post box. box. And then it takes about 3 to 4 weeks and you'll get an email saying your raw data is ready.
Great. Well, I'm one of those people though. So I've tried to do it 3 different collections with the 23andMe and I have low DNA in my saliva. So I've been rejected and I don't think I can do it again. So I don't know if there's any other options other than saliva for testing because I really want to get it done.
Did you try chewing the inside of your cheek?
I did.
And still it didn't do it.
Still, yeah. I guess I don't have DNA.
Wow. Then you're going to have to do it by blood.
By blood. Okay. Yeah. Yes. I'll have to talk to you more about that after.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's great. And then I know people are concerned about privacy and what is our gene information, what is our gene information going to be used for? Is that something we need to worry about?
Well, I do advise patients if they are really concerned about it, that they can use a fake name when they're registering for it, as long as they tell me what their new name is.
Yes.
But to be honest with you, in terms of big, large companies such as 23andMe, you are a number. Your name is not, you know, they're not interested in your name. They're interested in just your genetic data. They're looking at this many people code this way for this gene and what is the outcome in terms of this disease. So they're looking to make correlations and comparisons. And I've had mine out there for a long time. Insurance companies have not indicated in any way that they're going to use that data. But if anybody's concerned, just use a different name.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a good way to address that. And I know some people are worried about maybe knowing which genes they have. So in that case, do you recommend they don't get tested if they're going to be paranoid about, oh, I have a high risk factor or a gene for breast cancer?
On the contrary. Okay. So I look at what I call lifestyle genes. I don't even look at the BRCA gene for that exact reason that I spoke about. Just because you have it doesn't mean you're going to get it. I'm interested in the genes that turn on the BRCA gene. And it just, you know, 4-hydroxyestrogen doesn't just apply to breast cancer. It's also fibroids and endometriosis, and it can be polycystic ovary and all sorts of other issues as well. So I don't look at just disease genes. I look at the lifestyle genes that we can have an impact with. Yes, that actually ends up greatly impacting the diseases long term. I mean, that's the whole point of it. There's also ways, different ways that you can, you know, explain it with patients. There are some patients who say to me, I don't want it in any disease terminology. I just want to know what I have to do. And that's okay. So I won't explain to them why, which is what I usually do for most patients, but I'll just explain. These are the things that I see. This is the way that you need to eat. This is the way that you need to exercise. These are the supplements that would benefit you from. But the biggest thing is we have the power to influence that gene. So I want to know what you code for that gene. I want to help you push it to its positive position. Genetics literally has saved my life, and it's something that I am extremely passionate about. And I truly believe in my heart, as does my surgeons, that I would not be here if it wasn't for me altering the expression of my genes. And so it's pretty powerful what we can do and the impact that we can have on the body.
Wow.
And I encourage everybody to experience that.
So you've gone through some personal challenges yourself, it sounds like, and with knowing what your genetics, like what your imprint or your genetics are, it's really helped you.
100%. Absolutely.
Amazing. Thanks for sharing. And I love the idea of being proactive, right? So you can be a gatekeeper, a naturopath trained in genetics can be the gatekeeper of the information and doling out the information that you need in order to live a healthy lifestyle. And can you tell us a little bit then about the gene RX? Am I saying it correctly? Because that helps to interpret the raw data, right? Because I think if someone gets the 23andMe report, can it be a little bit overwhelming and confusing?
So absolutely. With the 23andMe report, there's nobody that is overseeing you specifically. And a lot of the time they're looking at what I call non-clinical genes or nonsense genes. So the majority of our genes really don't have a huge effect on the body or that we know of yet. And then there's a great deal of genes that have fantastic clinical relevance. But as I spoke about, a gene can be in its on and its off position. So when you get back a report from 23andMe, which one is basic, they don't know you. So they don't know if you're expressing that gene, and people can read a sentence and that can really scare them. Or they can just come out and say you're positive for the BRCA gene, but they're not giving any guidance as to what to do about any of these genes. I'm also more interested in the interaction of genes. It's not just treating gene by gene, which is what most platforms do. So what I mean there is, let's take consuming carbohydrates as you know, an area that we're looking at. So I don't just look at one gene that dictates how your body responds in terms of insulin or weight or inflammation or even cancer with respect to carbohydrates. I look at a couple of different genes. So let's say one of those genes you code really well for. So a treatment plan and a basic program might say, you code well for carbohydrates, you can eat as many of them as you want. The next carbohydrate gene, if they're testing more than one, might say, you're heterozygote here. You took one of each of those, one good, one not so good gene. So you don't code that well, you need to restrict your carbohydrates. And let's say they go as far as to incorporate a third one that you are variant for. This is, oh my gosh, you make so much insulin with carbohydrates. You create a great deal of inflammation. You need to cut them out. So what does one person do with that? Am I allowed them? Do I have to restrict them? Do I have to cut them out? How, by how much? So what I did is with each section, whether it's carbohydrates or fats or protein or serotonin or dopamine or detoxification, is I wrote all the different algorithms for the different possibilities of combinations of the genes within each section, and then treatment protocols to go with that. So it makes it extremely user-friendly, and you're getting a very specific interaction. So if I took that example with the carbohydrates, rather than saying you can have unlimited, you need to restrict them, you can't have them at all, my program would explain, this is where the sensitivities lie with carbohydrate consumption. It could be just inflammation, it could be insulin, whatever it might be. And because of this, you need to eat carbohydrates X number of times a day, and it needs to be X size of carbohydrates. So it gets very specific with what type of carbohydrate they can have, how many times a day they can have it, what the physical size of that carbohydrate is. Similarly with proteins, similarly with saturated fats, similarly with serotonin, inflammation, immunity. So each section is a compilation of just that patient and how their specific coding for one gene interacts with their specific coding for another gene and their specific coding, and what do we do with that.
So this is truly individualized nutrition. It's really putting all of those pieces together. So it sounds like, yeah, you're really looking at that individual in front of you and being very specific in terms of timing of certain macronutrients, even the amount. So can we talk a little bit about nutrition and diet and weight? So a lot of our listeners, you know, are creeping up to their 50s, they might notice that, okay, what I did in my 20s or 30s isn't working for me anymore. Why am I getting this spare tire around the midsection? So can we talk about what's influencing that and how we can use genetics to support a healthy weight?
Absolutely. Genetics becomes really important, particularly as we head sort of towards perimenopause, menopause, and as we age. What happens as we age is, just as naturally as estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone fall, cortisol, our stress hormone, rises. So when we sort of hit our late 40s, early 50s, and so for some people, it's even earlier, we make more cortisol for the same stressor than we did when we were, say, in our 20s. And as mentioned, cortisol is the one of the biggest influencing factors that turns on or off the expression of a gene, and it really starts to hit the metabolism. Even outside of genetics, cortisol has the ability to reduce the rate of the metabolism from 92% down to 35%. Oh my God. It also has the ability to triple the release of insulin to all grains and starches and sweets and fruits. Now, that rate of metabolism, that drop in metabolism, is because cortisol alters the production of the three hormones that control our metabolism. They're called ghrelin, leptin, and adiponectin. So they control everything from hunger and food cravings and food seeking behavior right down to the actual rate of the metabolism, where we will put our fat, particularly around that abdominal area. Do we convert our good thermogenic brown fat into white adipose tissue, all of those sort of things. And our production of those hormones, adiponectin, leptin, and ghrelin, how fast our resting metabolic rate is, that is all determined by our genes. So when we hit menopause or perimenopause or 40s and 50s and our cortisol levels start to rise, or if cortisol is just rising because you're going through something very stressful or we're living through COVID, and I'm certainly seeing increased expression of adverse genes during this with my patients. Mm-hmm. What happens is now, if you have a gene which says, oh, you make, you know, an imbalanced amount of those metabolic hormones, all of a sudden those genes are going to turn themselves on. And now your fat burning hormones are going to start to plummet and your fat storing hormones are going to start to rise. Your hunger hormones, and particularly those food seeking behavior hormones. And in fact, during COVID, 47% of adults have admitted to the inability to stop eating. And that's huge. Almost half of the adults. And when it turns into an inability to stop eating, then you know that your hormones there are involved. Not only that addictive hormone dopamine, but also the hormones that control the food-seeking behavior, such as ghrelin and leptin.
Mm-hmm. Those and are some huge differences. Yeah, from that cortisol, 92% to 35% decrease, tripling the release of insulin to certain foods. That I see that a lot too in my practice right now, where people just can't stop eating either. They just need one thing after another. They're searching for something and they never feel satisfied. So absolutely. What can we do, like, with this cortisol impacting our genes in this way? What can we start to change in our life?
So again, we can also see who's more susceptible to it by looking at the stress genes and how people code for it. But for everybody right now, my favorite go-to is Serenitin Plus by Douglas Labs or Pure Encapsulation. So it's a natural substance that not only decreases the excess release of the stress hormones, cortisol, adrenaline, and noradrenaline from the adrenal glands, but it also helps to unstick the stress pathway. And by that, what I mean is we have two sides to our central nervous system, as you know, the parasympathetic, which is the campfire or the quiet side, or the sympathetic, which is go hunting or fight or flight. And it's physically impossible to live in both at once. And what happens is when we're exposed to chronic stress, or more frequent stress, or genetically, we make more than the normal amount of stress hormone, or our stress genes don't code very well. When we have so many stressors in a row, we turn on our central nervous system from that quiet side, we shift it to that stress side, that fight or flight side. And normally once we're done a stressor, our stress side of our nervous system should turn itself off and we should go back to the quiet side. But when we have too many stressors in a row, it kind of gets stuck there, and it gets stuck there through receptors in the brain. And the Serenitin Plus will help to unstick those receptors in the brain and actually get you back to the quiet side of the central nervous system. So it's a really great nutrient supplement with no contraindications that can really help the stress response. The other thing, which is, you know, normally what I'm saying is getting together with friends, getting outside. Certainly exercise is a great stress booster. And if you can do it safely outside, going for walks with friends, one of the biggest things that we have lost during COVID, which I talk with people about, is we have lost that connection, but we've lost a lot of joy in our day because we can't have that connection. So much has been taken away. So each day is sort of get up, go through the motions, go through work, and then go to bed, whatever that work might be for that individual. And we used to balance that with saying, I'm going to meet up with a friend after work and go for a glass of wine, or we're going to go shopping, or we're going to go do something. And that having that to look forward to was actually something that would lower our stress hormones. And we don't have that anymore. So we have to find new ways of starting to create that, whether it is really going out of your way to meet somebody outside, or meeting up on Zoom. The other really big stress reliever is sleep. Sleep is not just a time for rest. It is a time for health. And our bodies, even from a weight point of view, sleeping 7 hours versus 8 hours a night actually decreases our ability to lose weight by 55%. and within 1 week can actually increase weight by 6%. So that's pretty significant. It also will increase the amount of cortisol we make the next day if we don't sleep. So getting that sleep in is also really, really huge. Mm-hmm. Meditation, another key one, very difficult to do when those stress hormones are high and our mind is very busy, but keep practicing it. Keep bringing that quietness into the day.
Those are some great recommendations I think we can all benefit from, and really planning something you're looking forward to each and every day, even if it's something small. It's good to hear it can make a huge impact, because sometimes we might feel too tired. We're just like, okay, I'll just go through the motions, get to bedtime, and that's it. But you're really emphasizing get that pleasure in, really prioritize your sleep, get your meditation in. So it makes me wonder. So a lot of times we're trying to listen to our body and see if we're really really hungry. So how can we break in that moment when we're like, I just want to eat more. I have cravings. I'm still hungry, or you think you are, but you really know you've eaten enough. What do we do?
Absolutely. So again, that's coming from our hormones. And we can only, first of all, we'll never fully, it's very difficult to alter the expression of those genes, those metabolic hormonal genes, through just willpower itself.
Yes.
that willpower will give in, because that food-seeking behavior, which comes from a hormone called ghrelin. Ghrelin is released when we don't have enough food sources in our body. So our body thinks we're starving, so it says, go find more food. And leptin is a hormone which comes out and says, I have enough fuel sources, I don't need to keep looking for it. But the problem is that when stress is around, it increases ghrelin production and it increases the expression of the genes that make ghrelin. So whether or not you've just eaten, your brain doesn't get that cue that you have just eaten, so it's going to drive you right back to the cupboard. Patterning behavior, you know, I have tried over years with patients, go do a puzzle, get outside, do some exercise, do something instead of eating. It doesn't really work though. When those hormones are off, we need to fix the hormone. Once the hormones are reset, then a lot of those behavioral mechanisms, such as redirect yourself to go do an activity versus the fridge, is much easier, but initially it's tough. So initially what I do to help reset all three of those metabolic hormones, ghrelin, leptin, and adiponectin, is to use a product called Tri-Metabolic Control by Douglas Labs. And it is a mixture of two different herbs and one different amino acid, which will start to drop ghrelin, regulate out leptin, and increase adiponectin. So literally in the first week, we'll start to see a shift to it. By about week three, you'll really see the behavioral changes, but you also start to see an increased rate of the weight loss, because we are maximizing the metabolic rate through the proper route. We're not hyperstimulating the nervous system, which is sort of the very old school way of doing it, where people would then get sort of racing hearts and sweats. But we're doing it through the proper route of maximizing the body's potential of all three of those metabolic hormones that have gotten mixed up from stress, that's gotten mixed up from age, all sorts of variables.
Mm-hmm. So really getting to the root cause. I know I try with patients to set a timer for 10 minutes, go read, do something you like, but that urge can be so strong that people can't override it. So really getting to balancing the hormones is key. So thank you for sharing those. Mm-hmm. Is there, in terms of nutrition then, so it sounds like it's pretty individualized, or are there certain things that we, you know, should be doing with our nutrition and diet and things we should be avoiding?
It is so extremely individualized. It's funny, you know, two of my first five books are all on diet, and I didn't even carry them anymore because they don't apply, because there is no one diet for everybody. And this is why there are stacks and stacks and stacks of diet books out there, all with good information. They all work for somebody, but they don't all work for everybody. And this is why you'll see two people go on a ketogenic diet. One does extremely well and one doesn't. One will go on a vegan diet that is, you know, higher carbohydrate and higher monounsaturated fat, and they do really well, and their friend tries to do it with them and they don't do well at all. So our genes will dictate who is best with intermittent fasting, who needs three meals a day, how much protein you need per meal, what type of protein, how much carbohydrate and fat you need per meal. What levels will stimulate fat storing versus weight loss? So it is extremely individual. And this is probably one of the things that led me into starting to look into genetics. It was this philosophy of, why are two people coming to me presenting with the same issue? One treatment protocol, whether it's for blood pressure or weight, works extremely well, whereas for the other person, it doesn't work at all. And so that's what led me down into, you know, looking further for more answers. And genetics has been my savior for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing all of that information. I'm sure we could talk for hours and hours on end. Is there anything else the listeners should know about genetics or gene testing in relation to weight loss that we didn't cover?
Not really. I mean, genetics will also show how stress will impact your weight specifically as well. It really does show all variables. It'll show what type of exercise is ideal for you, how your sleep patterns are, because our sleep affects it. But the biggest thing I can't say enough of, which we sort of touched on, is don't be afraid of getting your genes tested. They are your platform. They are your stage. And we have the ability to shift it. I will never pull out a gene for somebody from their data that I can't do something with. I never want to hand somebody, oh my God, you got this gene. Sorry, good luck. It's always going to be, okay, this is how this codes, but this is what we can do to turn it off. And again, I'm the perfect example. If it wasn't for changing my genes, I would not be here today. And yet, not only did I go through that experience, I went through it at a level where surgeons were just blown away. So we really do have the ability to control our health and control our future. So don't be afraid of that.
Mm-hmm. It's so powerful. It's so important. If you want to fit into your genes, get your genes tested. I love that name. Great. Well, how can people connect with you, Dr. Penny? What's the best way for them to reach you?
So if you're looking to get your genes tested, you can do that through any of your naturopaths or healthcare practitioners, because the healthcare practitioners can set up an account with GeneRx. So you can just go to your doctor that you're already with if that's what you're looking for, and you can work with your naturopath or doctor on that. If you're looking to connect with me specifically, then my website is pkrhealth.ca. Perfect. And I'm happy to help anybody through it.
Great. So we'll put that information in the show notes for sure. And then one question just to leave listeners with. What's your favorite meal or food right now?
Yeah. My favorite meal. So I'm an intermittent fasting girl, according to my genes. And my new favorite meal, this is going to sound really pathetic, part of my favorite meal is a protein shake by Designs for Health. It's called Pure Paleo. And so reason is I have never liked the taste of meat. I don't eat meat. I just have never liked the taste of it. So this is a protein powder, which comes from hydrolyzed beef protein. And when the rep came into my office and said, we have this new protein powder, will you try it? I was gagging at the thought of it already. Like, I was like, you've got the wrong girl here. Like, the thought of drinking that is just no. And she said, well, it's 70% hydrolyzed collagen. So vanity in me started taking over, thinking, oh, my skin, my hair, my nails. Yes, my joints as well. But, you know, I was going straight to my skin and my hair. And she's like, it tastes fantastic. So hydrolyzed, as we know, means broken completely down into their single amino acid. So it's a better absorption. So, and I chose the chocolate flavor. So I took it home and I'm literally, I shook it up and I'm standing over the sink ready to spit it out, literally. And it was fantastic. It tastes amazing. But what I've also noticed with my body, because meat has a different ratio of amino acids than a lot of the other protein products that I normally do, whether it's egg whites or fish or vegan products, there's a better building capacity with those. And so I did notice a big increase, not only in energy, but in repair in my body tissues, but I also noticed a significant difference in my face and my skin and my hair. So now that it's colder, I actually mix it with warm almond milk and it's like a hot chocolate. And I know it's sad to say, but that is truly one of my my favorite. If it was a full meal, it would have to be grilled salmon and grilled vegetables and a big glass of heavy red wine.
Nice. And some dark chocolate covered almonds after. And
exactly.
You're such a naturopath, so am I. So that's okay. So I'll have to give that one a try. I use collagen powder, but never a chocolate flavored one. So
I just, you know what? I thought I'm going to kill two birds with one stone here. Yeah. I'm going to get my protein in and get my collagen, and it tasted fantastic. So
sounds like a great hot chocolate for this cold weather that we're having. So thank you for sharing. So now I'm going to share my super mom moment. So my super mom moment for this week is when Stuart and I are walking, or sometimes as Pete Stuart and I are having dinner, we'll tell stories. So we tell stories about a gingerbread house, about magic wands, but sometimes he does like it to go into there being a bad guy and running away from the police. But I think a super mom moment is that we've really instilled the love of storytelling. So Stuart will ask us to tell stories. He'll interject and talk about what's going to happen next in the story, or he'll tell his own. So I think it's just a great way to stimulate all of our imagination at this time. For my mama mess up, I have to admit our house is getting to be really, really cluttered. So there's toys all over the place, papers, books. I need to set aside some time to go through some of Stuart's old clothes and old toys. I think the problem is, though, right now with the pandemic, it's hard to get rid of things and give things away. But I think at least organizing and putting away things that we're no longer using could make a difference. So my goal is to spend 10 minutes a day just starting to go through things, to declutter, to tidy. I know it probably doesn't sound like much time, but you know, when you're working full time and your mind is elsewhere, I just haven't made it a priority. So we do a little cleanup after dinner and at the end of the day, but you know, going through things to get rid of is a whole other story. So I'm going to work on that. My mama must have has been reality TV again. Pete and I are really enjoying the Come Dine With Me Canada series. It's a whole lot of fun to watch. If you don't know the premise, there's, I think it's five competitors where they each take turns hosting a dinner party at their house with the other competitors. And there's usually a certain theme around the menu. They have to entertain their guests. It's just really fun, really light. It keeps us laughing and it's interesting to see what people make. So that's a nice little escape. We might watch an episode a day, sometimes while we're eating lunch, which I know is not great to do, but I do try to eat mindfully as much as possible while watching TV. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Email or connect with us on Facebook or Instagram. We'd love you to subscribe, leave us a review, and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us, too. Thanks again, Dr. Penny. We'll have to have you back on to pick your brain. You have so many great analogies, so many great references to studies out there. So I think this is an amazing resource for all of our listeners. Thanks again.
I'd be more than happy to come on anytime. Thank you for having me.
Great. Thank you. Take care. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.